Thanks very much for joining us here today. This morning we're going to take you through our full year results, and I'll be taking you through an update on our strategy. The headlines. Our clear divisional strategies have delivered better business performance this year. Student has delivered revenue and fleet growth alongside margin progression. Transit is winning additional business in the more exciting areas of the mobility market. Greyhound is responding to our improvement plans. First Bus has delivered revenue and profit growth, with margins strongly ahead, and Rail has generated £70 million of profit, driven by Great Western Railway, although we have taken an accounting provision for South Western Railway, given the uncertainty around that contract. So overall, we produced strong revenue, adjusted profit, and EPS growth in the year, ahead of our expectations, and we've also generated substantial cash and reduced leverage. You'll have seen that alongside our results, I've also put forward a clear statement of a strategic intent, which sets out the group's emphasis for the future in the dynamic public transportation market, as well as the portfolio rationalisation that will help us get there. This plan will unlock the value in the group and will give all our stakeholders clarity as to the future direction and tangible, deliverable action plans. But before we get into all of that, let me hand over to Nick, who's going to take you through the financial results.
Thank you, Matthew, and good morning, everyone. So let me take you through the financials and provide you with some more colour on the headlines. Overall, and at constant currency, revenue grew by 11%. But if we take out the full period effect of SWR and the extra week last year in the road divisions, it's 6% for the group and 2% for the road divisions. Adjusted operating profit at £333 million, grew by 4% in constant currency. Excluding rail and adjusting last year's 53rd week and currency, road operating profit increased by 3.6%. The student and bus divisions performed well, with margin growth of 50 and 180 basis points respectively. This was tempered by the expected decline in Greyhound profitability and a lower margin in transit due to higher costs. Interest cost has fallen by £13 million this year, reflecting the lower financing costs achieved through last year's refinance activities and the repayment of the bond this year. The improvement in operating profit, combined with the reduced finance costs, has driven an increase in adjusted EPS up 15% in constant currency. There are adjusting items, and I will talk about these later. Our focus on cash delivered another strong result. Full-year cash performance exceeded expectations, with £197 million of cash. Within this is a rail phasing benefit of £90 million, which will flow out in subsequent periods. Net debt reduced to £903 million, with reported leverage reducing to 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA. Rail ring-fence cash increased by £133 million, including the £90 million phasing benefit, leaving the ring-fence cash adjusted measure unchanged. Moving on to the revenue bridge. Going from left to right, you can see that the absence of a 53rd week reduces revenue by 1%. Following the strong bid season, First Student grew revenues by 5%. Transit and bus grew by 1%. The Greyhound reduction reflects route rationalisation and the withdrawal from Western Canada. Rail benefited from the first full year of SWR, as well as the transition of GWR from premium to subsidy following the introduction of the new trains. Overall, like-for-like rail revenues grew by 5.8%. Turning now to slide 6, the overall profit grew by 5%, or 4% on a constant currency basis. Strong revenue growth in students, coupled with margin improvement, drove a 13% profit improvement. The 180 basis points margin increase in bus fueled a 31% increase in operating profit.
first rail profits were predominantly driven by GWR. The group movement is largely due to $7 million of currency gains last year as a result of the bond settlement. Let me now take you through the bottom half of the adjusted P&L. As I mentioned before, the lower financing costs contribute £13 million. Following the US tax reforms in the previous year, the tax rate is broadly unchanged. We expect the natural rate of tax to be between 24 to 25% going forward, but for next year, we expect the tax rate to be similar to this year. As before, cash tax remains low in the year. It was $7.5 million. And finally, a reminder that the SWR franchise, we have a minority partner, MTR, who owns 30% of the franchise. This slide summarizes the adjusted items for the year. The two major adjusting items of SWR and North American self-insurance I will deal with on subsequent slides. Amortization is lower due to a number of 10-year-old customer contract intangibles now being fully amortized. The restructuring charge principally relates to withdrawing from Greyhound operations in Western Canada. We have included all the costs relating to the closure and have already included £9 million of property gains on disposals of related properties. We still expect to generate further offsetting property gains, and we now expect that the cash cost of withdrawing from Western Canada to be offset from disposal proceeds. I have included an additional slide in the appendix. The recent High Court ruling on guaranteed minimum pensions has nationally affected most defined pension schemes in the UK. The £21 million adjustment relates to the effect on our UK bus schemes. The figure has been calculated by our pensions actuaries. The £16.2 million relates to the disposal process of our Manchester bus business, and partially offsetting this is the profit on sale of our Greyhound facility in Chicago, which was sold for $37 million. Looking at self-insurance, North America continues to deliver legal judgments which can be unpredictable, increasingly in favor of plaintiffs, and punitive in certain regions. First Group's North American insurance arrangements involve retaining the working loss layers in a captive and insuring against the higher losses. This is a complex and judgmental area, and we have always based our reserves on the levels recommended by our actuarial advisors. At the beginning of the year, we had a provision of $436 million. We have suffered a series of adverse settlements and developments on aged insurance claims. At the same time, there has been a continued hardening in the wider motor claims environment. This has led to higher specific case reserves and adverse development factors. As this position started to develop, we instructed a second additional actuarial review of the expected risk position and reserves to give us another gauge of the market. This review confirmed the deterioration in the claims environment and an increase in the expected level of settlements. This results in an increase in the expected settlement cost for claims based on two independent actuarial reviews. Accordingly, we have an adjusting charge of $125 million to increase the self-insurance reserve for historic claims. This leaves us with a closing reserve of $533 million. We would expect the majority of these claims will be settled over the next 5 years. And the operating charge for 18-19 reflects this revised environment. At the time of the SWR award, we were not the highest bidder, and we won the award by having a much higher quality score. Compared to previous bids, it was thought that a relatively high level of revenue protection was in place through the GDP and CLE mechanisms. In addition, the PCS requirements were much lower than East Anglia and our own TPE franchise. The SWR Rail franchise has been frustrated in trying to deliver that quality due to a number of significant number of challenges. We took over the franchise in the middle of the Waterloo upgrade relating to the platform extension project, which took longer and caused more disruption than expected. We inherited poor operating performance at the start of the franchise and continued poor reliability of infrastructure. Whilst the GDP revenue mechanism appears to be functioning as expected, the CLE risk-sharing mechanism is proving to be volatile with big swings in CLE growth rates. Industry delays to the introduction to new timetables will have a revenue effect, although the financial impact will be adjusted through the contract change process. And finally, the industrial action by the RMT has negatively impacted revenue and the customer experience. There is considerable uncertainty about the level of passenger revenue growth and future impact of the industrial action, in addition to uncertainty as to the level of strike amelioration recoverable from the DfT. We are in negotiations with the DfT to resolve these uncertainties, but at the current time, there is no certainty as to the outcome of these negotiations. We have reviewed our financial forecast, and in light of all these uncertainties, we have decided to provide for potential future losses over the remaining life of the contract. We have provided the maximum unavoidable loss, of which First Group's 70% share is £102 million, and First Group's 70% share of undrawn PCS and bonds is £65 million. So, let me walk you through the cash flow. From the left-hand side, road cash capex was £320 million. This is slightly above last year and in line with guidance. With a growing volume in student, the opportunity for cascade obviously reduces. We continue to maintain our discipline around capital investment and took the decision to put some of our capital spend onto operating lease this year. Road provisions includes the effect of insurance settlements and notional interest on the provision. Working capital includes the effects of strong operating days in student at the end of the year and the timing of supplier payments offset by the in-year asset disposals. Road operating cash flow was £194 million. This year, to make things clearer, I have broken out the rail cash flows. The rail inflow of £173 million includes £90 million of receipts that will unwind in future years. As we always say, cash flow over time is roughly operating profit subject to timing, and this year's cash flow reflects that. Rail profit after tax is generally available for dividend to the group. As we have said before, the capital expenditure in rail is normally funded through the franchise payments or through third-party capital grants. The investment in rail capex is usually using someone else's cash. As you know, rail is complex due to the many different contractual arrangements and franchise mechanisms. Rail ring fence cash, including the £90 million, has risen by £133 million. To be clear on the rail cash performance, I have put additional slides in the appendix. Moving across the page, pensions in excess of the P&L were £48 million, and I expect them to increase slightly next year. Interest cash payments were £44 million lower than last year, and this all leads to a positive inflow of £197 million. Turning now to the financial position. Our financial position remains strong, with headroom under our committed facilities excluding rail ring-fence cash, of £521 million. The movement from last year reflects the planned discipline to cash and borrowing to minimise interest following the repayment of the £250 million bond in January using existing cash and RCF. The overall net debt to EBITDA ratio has improved from 1.5 times to 1.3 times, and this is flat at 2.1 times when excluding rail ring-fence cash. We have improved our debt maturity profile to 4.3 years during the year, and our current investment grade rating from Standard & Poor's and Fitch is BBB- stable. We continue to pay approximately £60 million in deficit payments into our pension schemes. These payments are agreed with trustees and based on actuarial valuations. Based on the actuarial calculation of the pension deficit, the combined deficit of First Bus and the group scheme is approximately £250 million higher than on the accounting basis. So before I close, I thought it would be helpful to signpost some of the guidance peppered through the results. We expect the road divisions to improve earnings in the coming year, with Student and First Bus driving that performance. Rail benefited this year from a strong performance from GWR, following the successful resolution to a number of contractual issues. As a result, rail operating profit will moderate next year to more normal levels. Interest and tax should be broadly stable. We expect that free cash flow before acquisitions next year will be broadly flat. This includes the rail 90 million working capital and capital position unwind discussed earlier, which will be funded through a reduction in ring fence cash. So over the 2 years, we should effectively see £100 million a year of free cash. And with that, I'd like to hand back to Matthew.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for taking us through all of that. So, let me take you through the new strategy for the portfolio, as well as explaining to you where each of the businesses are headed. Having been in the job now for just over 6 months, let me start off with my assessment of where we are today. When I look at the group, I see five divisions, all in market-leading positions in the public transportation space. We have a common vision, to provide easy and convenient mobility, improving quality of life by connecting people and communities. The drivers that we've talked about in this marketplace continue to be valid, with issues like congestion, air quality, demographic and climate change all pointing towards public transportation as a solution. However, as the slide shows, you can cut our business in a number of ways, primarily geographically, but also by business model and customer type. When you get under the skin of the business, as I have, you find very different customers, stakeholders, and levers. And while there are many soft synergies that we've benefited from, there are limited hard synergies across each of the divisions, and in particular between the UK and the US. We have previously signaled our willingness to address the portfolio and have taken action this year in this regard. We've exited Western Canada in Greyhound. We've sold an oversized maintenance facility in Chicago and divested one of our Manchester bus businesses. We know there are challenges, friction costs, that have not gone away and which cannot be taken lightly, but now is the time to reconsider the portfolio and take clear steps to unlock its value. Overall, the business is performing better this year. I'll repeat what I said at the start. Student has delivered revenue and fleet growth alongside margin progression. Transit is winning additional business in the more exciting areas of the mobility market. Greyhound is responding to our improvement plans. First Bus has delivered revenue and profit growth with margins strongly ahead, and Rail generated more than £70 million of profit. In this context, today I'm announcing our plans to put the future emphasis of our business onto our core North American contract businesses, First Student and Transit, which have the greatest potential to generate value and sustainable growth over time. As a result, we will rationalize our portfolio. A process to sell Greyhound is already underway, and we will also pursue strategic options to separate First Bus from the group. These plans will be focused on securing best value for shareholders, moving quickly and with discipline. When looking at the structural alternatives for First Bus, we have a very clear understanding as to the regulatory procedures that we'll need to navigate, and we will use our strong relationships with other stakeholders, including pensions, to work our way responsibly through the consultations that will be required. I'll talk a little later about what we're already doing in the US, but as we look towards the North American marketplace, we will make sure that we have the right skill sets and structures to fully capitalize on our unique platform in North American and mobility services. Clearly, as we work through this plan, we will evaluate the application of any proceeds in the light of the group's capital structure and long-term liabilities, targeting the right balance sheet and leverage to deliver sustainable growth and shareholder returns. And we believe that the more focused group will be well placed to sustain a dividend in the future. In parallel, and of equal importance, we will continue to drive forward the clear strategies that we have in place for each division. They need to continue growing, delivering on our plans and driving costs down. As an aside, over the last 5 years, we've taken more than £200 million of cost out of the business, and a new program is in place designed to further combat inflationary pressures and deliver further cost reductions and efficiency improvements. So having given you the headlines of the updated strategy, let me take you through the divisions and how they performed this year and more about their prospects. Turning to First Student, our largest business, you can see that we've had an excellent year, delivering more than $230 million of profit. As you all know very well, we've spent the last 5 years focusing our portfolio through our up or out pricing strategy. This has logically meant jettisoning low-margin business if the districts were not prepared to accept a pricing increase at the level that enabled us to generate an adequate return. I can say categorically that the strategy has been successful. Having embedded our disciplined pricing model into the operation, we have now seen the business return to market share and fleet growth. We've had a strong bid season last summer at 92% retention for those at-risk contracts that were up for renewal and 97% overall. This retention rate has been at pricing levels in excess of the inflationary pressures we face, well into the mid-single digit range. And we've also been successful in winning new business this year from our competitors, reflecting our commercial strength, our leading customer satisfaction scores, and our strong health and safety record. Overall, this delivered revenue growth of 5.4%. Margins have also moved forward by 50 basis points to 9.5%, demonstrating the fact that driver costs, although are still a major factor in the business, have been offset by continued price increases and also cost and efficiency savings. So looking to the future, you know that we're the industry leader by far, and that we've now restored margins to levels that befit that. And we see growth opportunities as follows. We see organic growth continuing at around the low single-digit level. Next year, retention rates will be in the mid-80% levels, reflecting the mix of the coming bid season. And pricing will continue at levels designed to more than offset inflation as we maintain our discipline on generating the right returns. We will continue to develop and grow our technological offerings to the school boards. For example, First View, our student tracking app, has grown apace during this year and is now available to more than 200 districts, covering 350,000 students and has more than 50,000 users to date. We've begun to market additional services to the schools, such as routing, scheduling, and also, in conjunction with our transit colleagues, maintenance services. These mobility and transportation offerings will be marketed to schools that run their own transportation services, as well as to those that rely on external providers like us. These steps are designed not only to expand and upgrade our offering, but also may help to unlock the challenge of conversion. Each year we seek to find opportunities to demonstrate to schools the benefits of using external providers, and we tend to see low levels of conversion opportunities each year. Despite the continuing commentary suggesting a wealth of opportunities and the clear cost savings offered by the private sector, the industry has seen minimal movement towards outsourcing. And we believe that this comes down to the risk-averse nature of the decision makers alongside the relatively short average tenure of the school superintendents. And finally, we will complement this growth with selective M&A, reflecting the fact that this marketplace is highly fragmented and localized. So we have clear plans in place to continue our development of this market, and we're excited by the opportunity that a leader like First Student can benefit from. So let's turn to transit. Transit's had a solid year for contract retention at 89%. And with the new business wins, we were able to offset the impact of the loss of high-margin Canadian oil sands business that we talked about at the first half. We've seen some good business wins, particularly in Shuffle. And pleasingly, we've started to leverage our scale with Student to put together joint bids for maintenance contracts. It's also good to see that we've continued and developed our trials of autonomous vehicles this year. For example, we've been selected as a preferred partner to provide mobility as a service solutions to Denton County in Texas. This involves potentially demand-responsive rideshare, as well as the potential to provide a demand-responsive autonomous vehicle service. And we're also looking forward to next week when we're partnering with the City of Houston to start up a phased autonomous vehicle pilot on the campus of Texas Southern University. Some really exciting developments here, and we're also looking at further partnerships with ride-sharing and transportation network companies. Now, margins have been stretched this year with driver labor pressures and insurance costs adding to our overall cost base. However, we'll be pushing hard on operational performance, procurement, driver costs, and maintenance to start to improve these margins. We're already the leading private sector supplier of transit management in North America, and we have a well-established, profitable platform with relatively low capital requirements. You can see that our market-leading position means that we will clearly look to drive growth in our existing markets, but looking forward, this is where we're most excited about the future. You can see the potential for developing new market adjacencies, and we want to be part of this evolution. The marketplace is going to change over time, and we have the relationships and the credibility to do this. We already have a track record of moving into new markets, and we see autonomous vehicles and mobility as a service as being areas we can develop. On top of this, we'll be looking to enter into partnerships with ride-sharing and other TNCs where we can really offer a full service to our customer base and move into adjacent markets. So, putting our energies and investment into these two North American businesses will deliver us a leading platform to grow in mobility and transportation services for the future. Now moving on to Greyhound. As we discussed in the past, low-cost airline competition and a relatively low oil price has meant that Greyhound's been challenged this year. However, after adjusting for the impact of the 53rd week, Greyhound performed better in the second half of the 19 year than it did last year, an improvement from the half-year performance. I spoke to you at the half-year about the fact that whilst low-cost airline carriers will continue to be a challenge, there is a significant portion of our marketplace where the only competition is the car. I also said that focusing solely on the short haul would not be enough to drive profitability or returns going forward, particularly on the competitive East Coast. I concluded that there was a clear, ongoing attractive market for us, and we needed to leverage our market position and network to derive profitability from this space. The solution was driving pricing activity and reducing costs. And I'm pleased that through our new commercial team, we've already started to see the benefit of the dynamic pricing strategy, with yields up above 5%. And we've also started to implement cost reductions, removing headcount, restructuring our Bolt operations, as well as progressing plans to improve our maintenance performance. As well as seeing improvements in our dynamic pricing position, we've also introduced a number of passenger improvements, such as bus-side scanning of tickets across the network. And we've seen an improvement in the operation of the business, as new fleet has been brought online. Whilst the market has remained challenging and our plans are in the early stages, I have confidence that the action we've taken will deliver improvements in the business performance and a sustainable business going forward. Now, following our review of the portfolio, our strategy is to rationalize the business, and I believe that value for shareholders is best delivered by seeking new owners for the Greyhound business. And we're announcing today that a formal process is underway. This business has performed extremely well this year and has delivered like-for-like revenue growth of 1.6% through improving the customer offering and network management. Having been the first regional bus operation to implement a contactless solution across its entire fleet, we continue to see real progress in making our customers' lives easier by removing cash from the bus. Cash now represents less than 45% of all transactions, down from nearly 80% 2 years ago. And this speeds up the boarding process and the journey, as well as keeping us ahead of the changing consumer trends and behavior. We continue to work hard with our local authority partners, prioritizing those areas where bus travel is valued. Local partnerships supporting the clean air agenda are vital, and we progressed these well during the year, particularly in Glasgow, Leeds, Cornwall, and Bristol. and I'm particularly excited about some of the work that we've been doing with data mining and analytics companies to better understand the complexities of moving people across our congested cities and using this information to solve our customers' problems. Significant margin improvement has been made this year, with margins up 180 basis points to 7.5% and up 320 basis points from 2017. This kind of progress demonstrates how our focused and local approach to networks, pricing and cost has been successful over the last 2 years. We've also continued to rationalize our depot portfolio and took the decision to sell one of our Manchester depots in the year. So overall, this was a very good performance from Bus. Bus has momentum and is on a path to increase profitability. Its second half margins were in excess of 9%, and we see continued improvement for the coming year. Having driven the business to health, I believe that now is the right time to pursue structural alternatives for Bus to continue its progression and deliver values for shareholders while all the while managing the division's long-term liabilities. As we've discussed, there are limited synergies with the rest of the group, and its long-term liabilities are one of the larger drags on the group valuation. I believe that we're now positioned to generate value for this market-leading asset, but also address the associated liabilities in a responsible way. So finally, let's move on to rail. The challenges in the industry have been widely documented, with timetable issues, infrastructure problems, and industrial action all causing operational and customer experience issues. We've worked with our partners as best as possible to improve the service levels for our passengers. We've managed the large infrastructure and fleet upgrade on Great Western, resulting in recent performance back above 90%. We've worked with industry partners to amend local timetables to improve the TransPennine performance, to begin to alleviate the knock-on effect of timetable issues from other franchises. And on Southwest Railway, we've worked diligently to remove restrictions with Network Rail to deliver a more consistent service. Despite the above challenges, you can see that rail has contributed significantly to the group's performance and cash flow this year, with £70 million of profit and substantial cash generation. This has been driven by the performance of Great Western, where its good revenue performance has been augmented by the resolution of some historic claims with Network Rail. Great Western has benefited from the introduction of the new intercity express trains and the continued electrification of the line, and like-for-like revenue growth has been around 5%. TransPennine was hugely affected by the knock-on effect of last year's timetable issues, but has worked hard to improve its operational performance statistics, now up to the mid to high 80s. Despite operational challenges, growth on this franchise has been stronger than the industry at the average of 8%. And you'll recall that we were expecting to lose in excess of £20 million in TransPennine during the year. However, due to the resolution of certain claims, along with the continued diligent management of the franchise, none of the provision was utilized. Whilst we remain cautious and consider the overall provision on a prudent basis, this does demonstrate that our continued commitment to customers in this franchise has helped improve our position versus our accounting projection. So moving on to Southwest Railway franchise. As Nick mentioned earlier, this is a franchise that we won on the back of the quality scoring of the bid. We were not the highest bidder on price. I spoke at the half year of the numerous issues facing this franchise, with an aging infrastructure and industrial action proving making performance problematic, not least for our customers. And this has frustrated our efforts to deliver the quality elements of the bid. The franchise continued to be affected by industrial action during the second half of the year, and whilst operational performance has stabilized at the beginning of the calendar year through working with Network Rail on some specific issues, we are still seeing lower than expected volumes and revenues on the franchise. Due to the high level of uncertainty regarding the franchise's ability to generate revenue growth following strike action, and also the quantum of recoveries that we believe we are due from the DfT, we have taken a prudent view of the further outturn of this contract. As a result, we've taken an accounting provision for our share of the potential exposure to losses over the life of the franchise. It's important to note that we're in negotiations with the DfT to resolve the issues surrounding the franchise and to stabilize the financial position. And to underline the fact that this is an accounting provision, it's worth remembering that the franchise has made profits of £19 million since the start. So, let me conclude this section by saying that whilst we continue to scrutinize the balance of risk and reward on any future commitment that we may make, we'll continue to operate our existing portfolio in accordance to their terms, which is what you'd expect any responsible owning company to do. So having talked about through the plan, as well as the performance and prospects of each division, let's summarize our strategy. We will focus on the future to deliver sustainable value and growth in the North American mobility market, First Student and Transit becoming our core businesses. We will sell Greyhound, and we will seek structural alternatives to separate First Bus from the group. And we will continue to operate First Rail in accordance to its terms, with continued scrutiny of the risk and reward profile from any future commitments. Let me conclude. We've delivered strong revenue, adjusted profit, and EPS growth this year. You can see that we have clear divisional strategies for all of our businesses, and we have momentum. The businesses are in much better shape. We've looked at the business in detail and believe that this strategy takes account of the current context of the business and its market and positions it well for the future. And I believe that this strategy and the portfolio rationalization plan is the most appropriate means to deliver enhanced, sustainable shareholder value, having regards to all of our stakeholders. And I'm looking forward to continue the work that's already been started to deliver it. And with that, let me open up to any questions that you may have. Now, if you'd like to wait for the microphone and just announce yourself, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Daria Femina from Goldman Sachs. I have three questions, if I may. First one is, you mentioned the pension liability there. Can you talk a little bit about the implications that you expect to have on pensions from the announced strategy? The second one is on the progress on the Greyhound sale. Do you have any timeline? Have the process already started? And the last point is on rail. Can you talk a little bit about the risk-reward balance and what needs to happen for you to continue to bid in the future and remain in the business? Thank you.
Sure. Okay, well, let's take all those three. So I'll take all these ones, Nick.
Okay.
So in terms of the pensions, you know very well that we have a defined benefit pension scheme with UK Bus that is currently supported by our parent company Guarantee. So the cash flows that we pay in to make the deficit reductions are reduced due to the strength of the group and the covenant of the group is the lending to the trustees. So we would expect over time as we look to investigate the options that we will be having conversations as we work through these options with the trustees to ensure that we meet all of our responsibilities for the pension going forward. In terms of the Greyhound sale, look, all I can say at this point is we have a process that's been underway. It's been underway for a number of months. It wouldn't be sensible for me to put any fixed timetable on that, but we're working through that as quickly as we can and with the right amount of pace and looking broadly across the whole marketplace to attract the best buyers into that business. And we'll update you as and when that's appropriate. In terms of rail, the risk and reward discussion, well, I think it's clearly an important topic for the whole industry. You know that the Williams Review is currently underway, looking at the whole franchising structure. We've contributed to that. I mean, our perspective is very much about the ability to make the passenger experience better, much more quickly than the current franchise mechanism does, but also reflecting the fact that the risk and reward mechanisms have not necessarily been working as we'd expected. I think you know that the TransPennine franchise did not have any protection mechanisms. That was improved following the Brown Review with the Southwestern Railway mechanism put in place. But as we talked before, we don't believe that those mechanisms are necessarily working in the way that they were intended. And we will continue to scrutinize any future bids, looking at any new mechanisms that are put forward at the time.
Thank you. Damien Burrough from RBC. I've got three questions, please. First on the student business, 9.5% margin improvement. I know back in March, one of your competitors, National Express, was saying where they get the highest satisfaction, they're getting 15.2% margin. So is the aspiration within the group, given your satisfaction scores, to get to something similar? And if not, what holds you back? Is there a structural difference in the business that makes it fundamentally low return on capital, or can you get to that kind of level? Secondly, on rail, can I tackle this straight on? Because the industry seems to give what looks like a lot of very fence-sitting answers. On West Coast, you have an active bid. Are you or are you not still bidding on that? Yes or no would be a good answer. And finally, on separation, what do you mean by separation? I mean, people separate, then come back together for the sake of the kids. You know, how worked up a strategy is this? What kind of time frame and, you know, what kind of options are you looking at there?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let me work through those. So you're right, our competitor did talk about the fact that if you have good customer satisfaction scores, you get better margins. I don't think anyone's particularly surprised by that conclusion. We have many contracts that earn the level of margins that you referred to, and we have consistently over the past 5 years improved the stratification of our contracts so that overall the level of margin is improving. So earning a 15% return on a contract is not a problem. I think what you need to have a look at is the number of contracts that they have at the high levels of customer satisfaction versus ours. I think we have absolutely the leading customer satisfaction score. So I don't think there are any great revelations in that comment. And clearly, you know, our business is focused on customer satisfaction, and that's why the levels are at the level they're at. In terms of rail, you're right, it's a live bid. You know very well, Damien, the restrictions we have around talking about live bids. And you also know that there's a legal challenge at the moment, so our ability to talk about the West Coast is absolutely limited. But I can make some factual comment. We did submit a bid for the West Coast partnership, and that's all I can say. Moving on then to the separation, yeah, you're right, there are many options. We're putting everything on the table. We spoke a year ago about looking to unlock the value in the group and to mobilize the value in the group, and what we're saying categorically today is that we will pursue those options. Now, the options will include potentially a sale, either in the whole or in parts, and clearly we'll have to take a view on how that would best work for us. It could include partnerships. It could include, you know, potentially even a demerger. But that we are looking at all of the options. We're pursuing those vigorously, and you know we'll update you when we've got some more to say on that. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Gerald Koo from Liberum. Three for me. On starting with the Southwestern provision, can you just clarify? You talked about providing for the maximum unavoidable loss. Does that mean you provided for the absolute worst case, or is that maximum unavoidable in terms of your projections? And how does that play with the parent company support bond? I mean, if we count both as as liabilities, are we double counting or not? Secondly, with regard to, in particular, North America, are there any central costs that are allocated to the divisions? Obviously, I'm thinking about Greyhound in particular, given that it's for sale. Mm. Does the number you've reported for Greyhound represent the earnings that will be available to a buyer, or should we be adjusting that for central costs that you're allocating out of First Group North America or UK? And finally, the insurance provision in North America, does that relate to just transit, or is it the whole division? And maybe if it's the wider you know, North American business, can you give an indication of sort of allocation as to how much is associated with Greyhound, for example?
Sure. Okay. Well, let me take the first two, and I'll let Nick cover off the insurance provision. So in terms of the Southwestern, we have provided for the maximum exposure, and we also have had to take into account the fact that we've already made profit on that franchise, so the bar raises slightly. The interplay with the bonds is, well, the bonds is just a mechanism for backing up our ability to pay that maximum exposure, so you don't need to double count that. There's no double counting there. So, you know, we've taken a prudent view. The maximum exposure is what we should provide.
So just for clarity, it includes the cost of our performance bond,
yep.
Right? Just for clarity.
Yeah. And then on North America, Greyhound does have some central costs, but largely we allocate those across according to the activity. So, whilst with any of these types of separations, there's always sort of bits and pieces that need to be worked out, and you get a bit of movement. But largely, each of the divisions receives a charge for the services that it has produced. or that it is taken from the group. But Greyhound, you know, located in Dallas, doesn't get involved quite as much as the student and transit business in the shared service that they do. So, but to answer your question plainly, it's pretty much a fair profit that's in there with the right level of costs allocated to it. Of course, it depends on buyers and all of that. They'll have to take their own view of those things. And I'll turning to you, Nick, on the allocation of insurance.
Well, just for clarity, just for everyone, so the 18-19 operating charge includes the cost of the revised environment. So this provision doesn't relate to 18-19, just for clarity. It does affect all three divisions. The Greyhound element of the 125 was 27. So.
Damien Burr from RBC again. Can I just come back to my student question again? Just from your answer, can you just confirm, it sounds like you're saying that 9.5% is the best you can do in student bus margin. That would leave you as capital intensive as your competitors, but lower margin, and therefore lower return on capital. Is that what you're saying, or am I misunderstanding?
No, what we're saying is that we will continue to put forward pricing in excess of inflation. We will continue to improve our performance with our customers, and we'll continue to work on costs. So we still will grind the margins up in this business, and you know, we've got the business back to a position where it's generating the right level of return for the capital that we're putting into it.
Morning, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC.
Hi, Joe.
On the rail provisions, can you just explain the TransPennine situation a little bit more clearly? So you didn't use the provision that you expected this year, but it's remaining unchanged overall. So I'm just trying to work out what your, you know, how we should be thinking about future growth rates on that versus target, and you know, have they sort of deteriorated in the future? And Southwest Trains, what sort of growth rates are you assuming on that to get to that maximum provision there also? That'd be quite interesting to know. And finally, on the school bus business, we're sort of probably, you know, the vast bulk of the way through the bid season for next year. Can you just give a sense of what pricing has done across the portfolio, and indeed the contracts that have been renewed this year, and how that compares to your projections? If you can put numbers around it, it would be helpful. On driver wages.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, let's deal with that one first. So, yes, you're right, we are midway through the season, and the pricing we're expecting to be at similar levels to what we've seen in recent years. We're talking mid-single-digit levels. In terms of the inflation, we're still looking at inflation at the sort of the low 3%. So, again, we're still expecting to recover much more on pricing than we have done, than we will be getting hit by the driver cost inflation.
Does that mean, when you say mid-single digits, is that across the portfolio as a whole, or is that just on the
ones that are up for renewal? Yeah, and then we'll get an inflationary increase on the rest of the portfolio.
So you're going to be running over. Overall, at sort of what, sort of 3% versus 3% or something like that.
Yeah, a little bit more than, or 3.5, 3.7% more than inflation versus inflation. And then coming back to rail, yeah, I mean, I think that we took the provision on TransPennine last year. It's a long contract. It required, and we told you last year that we thought it's probably maybe 1 or 2% off the revenue growth that we put into the bid. It's actually very difficult to put forward the projections for this going forward, because we've seen this huge impact of the timetable changes, which has really delayed some of the impact of us putting our new trains in. So I think what we've done is we've gone back and looked at the growth. We've seen what we've seen this year is about 8%. We are expecting the growth to be higher than that because we're putting new fleet in. And clearly the fact that this has grown at 8% shows there's latent demand in that area. But it's difficult to be precise on, you know, and I don't really want to be precise in terms of exactly what number we're putting in the model. But I think we should take some comfort from the fact we made a provision last year. We were prudent in taking that provision, and we haven't had to use it. So, you know, we'll keep monitoring that as we're going forward. I mean, in terms of growth rates on Southwest Rail, the original bid, I think we talked around sort of 6-7% level of growth. Again, we've been hugely impacted impacted by infrastructure, the industrial relations. The timetable changes have affected Southwest Rail as well. We are starting to work on putting the fleet into that contract. And again, it is more difficult to lock down with all these timetable issues and the infrastructure issues precisely a growth rate that we'd all like to talk about. But suffice it to say, we've gone through this in a lot of detail. We've done a lot of scenario planning, a lot of modelling. And the reality is on Southwest Rail, you know, once you get to the maximum, it doesn't really matter what assumptions you put in because you just got to the maximum. And I think that's the position we've taken. Let's take the maximum provision. And, you know, the key thing for us is that we are in negotiations with the DfT to improve on that position.
And just on that point about the negotiations with the Department of Transport, how sympathetic do you think that they are with respect to what's gone on at Waterloo? And is there any timetable on getting a resolution?
Yeah, so I don't want to categorise this as just being about Waterloo. This is about an ageing infrastructure. I mean, you're seeing this week as points failures for the last couple of days on Southwest Rail, and you know people are being hugely impacted. A combination of this infrastructure problem. We've worked very hard with Network Rail to lift some of the temporary speed restrictions, try and get things moving quicker, to get us back up and running quicker during the day. All these kind of things, and we're working very hard to improve the performance. You know, these franchises have contract clauses that allow you to have conversations and negotiations with the DfT. And, you know, there is a very uncertain position. This is probably a position that the DfT hasn't really been in, and we haven't really been in, having to try and work through the impact, the multiple impacts of industrial relations on top of timetable changes, on top of infrastructure issues. And we're doing a lot of work, our rail team is doing a lot of work behind the scenes to work through what we think the impact should be and what we think we're due, and we'll work hard at that very quickly to get it resolved.
Thank you. Just a quick modelling, some of past question. You talked about the synergies from the multiple businesses. They're limited, only soft synergies, no hard synergies. But to make it clear for the sum of parts modelling, are there any dis-synergies that would potentially come when Greyhound is sold, if and when UK bus goes away, that to make it clear?
Look, I think there were... It's difficult to say about UK Bus because we don't know precisely how that's going to work through. I mean, we talked about we will have to work through the impact on the pension scheme funding and make sure we responsibly deal with the issues there. On Greyhound, again, Greyhound has its own pension scheme. We'll have to make sure that we're leaving that in a sensible position. But again, until we've worked through the process and we've clearly got a sale in front of us, it's difficult to say. But in terms of sort of dis-synergies, in terms of the operations, those kind of things, I don't really think there's anything particularly significant there. Good. There we go. Thanks.
Morning, everyone. It's Alex Patterson from Investec. Three from me, please. Firstly, just... could you say in North America what you expect the level of insurance provision to be going forward and how that changes year on year? I imagine that going forward you're going to make a higher provision than historically. Would you mind saying what that is and what the change is? Secondly, just on SWR, you talk about the infrastructure challenges. Is there anything within the train operator's control that could have been done differently or can be done differently? I mean, clearly you're working with Network Rail. Is it really all them, or is there anything else that you could have done or anybody else could have done? And then thirdly, just on, so I was trying to find the pensions deficits by company. Could you just remind me for Greyhound, what is the pension position there, and would there be, what cross guarantees are offered? Do you have to put anything into that scheme in order to secure a sale?
Sure. Well, let me just deal with that one first. I mean, I think if you go back, if you go on to page 47 of the book, and Nick, correct me if I'm wrong here, we've set out what the North American schemes are. There's 164 million of accounting deficit. I'd suggest there's probably half and half between the US and Canada. We'll have to work through the funding obligations for the US and Canada. Obviously, they work in a slightly different way from the UK scheme, so you end up with the accounting deficit versus the actuarial deficit being probably more closely linked.
Closer together, yeah.
Yeah, much more closely linked. But we will have to work through that. In terms of the North American insurance, Nick will just cover that one off. So let me just talk about Southwest Rail. So, look, there's always things we could have done better. We took over this franchise at a period of a great deal of upheaval. It's fair to say that the management team that we took over was probably less fulsome than we would have hoped in terms of we like to retain some of the management, and that didn't necessarily happen in this franchise. And there were some key decisions that were taken, and again, prior to us taking over, but it is within the train company's control in terms of the control rooms and moving teams down into Basingstoke. And, you know, we realized that what we needed was people up in Waterloo seeing what was happening in Waterloo and reacting to that during the day. So we've set up, you know, control teams, SWAT teams up in Waterloo that are looking at how we can, when there's been issues with the franchise in the morning, it's about how quickly we can get back and running for the afternoon. Because I think at the start of the franchise, we were seeing these things drag on until 4 or 5 o'clock, which is then it just turns into a whole day issue. And with the teams and, you know, the teams that we brought in are now getting that working much better. We've actually got somebody, again, this is one of the benefits of our joint venture partner, someone that's working for MTR, came in helping us as a sort of COO type character, really looking at how we can improve the performance every day. So yeah, look, the vast majority, 70% plus of this stuff is down to Network Rail, unfortunately. And we're working with them, and we know Andrew Haynes well, and we're working hard with that team. But there's still, you know, 20 to 30% that's down to us or allocated to us, and we've got to do what we can to get the teams working to get the thing back moving as quickly as we can. So just on that insurance
question. Yeah, in terms of the insurance provision, I mean, the overall insurance provision, I would expect it to stay at the higher level because as we pay that down, we'll be providing insurance provision for current year claims. So in the 18-19 year, we increased the insurance charge for the operating profit by over $18 million.
Hi, Joel Koo from Liberum again. On transit, I think historically you've talked about being able to sustain margins in the sort of 7% range. Do you think that is still potentially valid? And you know, how long do you think it will take to get back into that sort of range? And you know, what are the key measures you envisage in terms of getting yourself there?
Yeah, no. To be fair, Gerald, yeah, we did talk about that in the past. That margin included the very profitable business that we had in Canada. So when I spoke about this last year, and maybe we talked about it at the half as well, we talked about getting margins into sort of the mid-5 levels. Now we're down at the sort of high 4s. We'd expect to, you know, next year with the additional insurance costs, we'll probably end up being at a similar kind of level, but we'd expect to work it up from that 5% level. We're not saying that we'll get it up to 7% in the short term. And again, we have a business here, low capital intensivity, still got what we believe is strong margins for the industry and probably leading margins for the industry. But when it won't get up to 7%, it'll be more at the 5s. Damien.
Some issues on the change in the group structure ahead.
Sure.
I know, you know, when you sold Manchester or one of the depots there, Queen's Road, you sold the business but seemed to retain the pension liability. In terms of the ambition with Greyhound and whatever happens with UK Bus, would the ambition be that any pension liabilities would also separate with those businesses, or would you ever consider a situation where there was recourse to, if you like, legacy first group in any of the disposals?
Sure. Look, I think our ideal situation is that the pensions, where they can be, would move with any structural change that we make. But frankly, we'll just look at the financials at the time. It really depends on the strength of the business that might be buying the operations. We take that very seriously. You know, there have been some obviously very high-profile issues around passing on pensions liabilities in the UK, and we will be thinking about those issues as well. But you know, ideally, we'll be looking to sell the businesses as a whole with the, you know, the assets and the pension obligations moving at the same time. But it will have to be dealing with that on a case-by-case basis. Good. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for coming along today. Appreciate your time. And we'll see you in 6 months' time.